the game. Okay, I'm very sorry to everybody listening. I forgot that I put that there. I'm kind of sad that we didn't call it the game.
Thankfully, for the rest of the internet, it was already taken. How did you decide what games to play?
Well, we decided from the start to play games that we love. A lot of people just go with whatever's trendiest at the time because people will be searching for it and that gets views. We wanted to convince people that we were passionate about gaming though first by playing our favourites. You pick a lot of things that you've never played before though.
I think there's a magic to playing something for the first time so that everyone can laugh at how bad you are. I always find it really interesting and fun to see someone new reacting to something that I'm really familiar with. How's it different to filming your other videos?
Well, for one, we don't really have to come up with totally new ideas every time. We just film us playing, having lols, and edit it into a video. The lack of creative pressure makes it very fun.
You need a whole other set of technology, too. The process of capturing video game footage and editing is actually really complicated.
I let Phil do all that. I tried to research it once and my brain nearly dribbled out of my ear. I just look after the cables so they don't turn into a big black wiry ball of hell.
What's the secret to good gaming videos?
Lots of people make lots of different kinds of gaming content. It's as diverse as comedy or vlogging, really. You could do reviews or videos about gaming culture and the industry, machinima, and then, of course, there are Let's Players.
We are definitely a Let's Play channel. I think the magic behind those is it's like you're hanging out with the people you find entertaining. It's like any other sort of sport or news comedy show that reacts to things that are happening. We just joke around and react to the games as a mutual interest to talk about.
I think you can still be a bit creative, though, especially getting your personality through in the editing. I mean, this channel was supposed to be our super easy film it and whack it together project, but I ended up spending ages editing these ones too. I think genuinely all of our gaming videos are hilarious, and I watch them back at least 3 times after uploading them. I think it just says a lot about our chemistry.
Finally, why do you think the life of your sim, Dill Halter, is such a success?
People just like to watch other people playing house.
Yeah, I think the idea of Dan and Phil having a son and building a home, even though that's not at all what it is, appeals to a lot of people.
It's nice and domestic. For real though, we had no idea how funny and amazing it would be. It's really like he's a special little guy with his own personality. Wait, do you reckon he might be dead when the person is listening to this?
Don't say things like that, Dan. I will hack the game if I have to make him immortal. At the time of recording this, he is alive and well. Just like he will be forever in all of our hearts.
Well, thank you very much, Dan and Phil. We wish you all the best spending your time playing games.
Brain farts.
A brain fart is when you have to write out the first thing that comes into your head with no filter. Start with any word and instantly put down whatever you think of next. It probably won't make any sense, but that's the point. Pure, uncensored brain waffle. We decided to do just that, and we will now read them out for you. Please don't psychoanalyze any of this. Phil, you go first.
Okay. The mice were screaming as tiny badgers were turning into meteors which landed in the lake where life began. The coaster is made out of tinfoil, which doesn't heat the mug of warm soup that is filled with worms on Halloween where panda masks are all the rage. Teeth are sharp and blood is pouring out of the waterfall, which isn't very Christmassy. Hopefully I won't get dental floss in my stocking this year. Why are they even called stockings? What is that reflection in my glasses? It looks like the butt of an angel. Who was better or worse than Spike? I think I like Spike, which makes me want to twist my hair into a unicorn horn. Should I get my mum the unicorn slippers or the heated narwhal slippers when they come into stock? But shipping is expensive from the US. Did they even come in on a ship? Did Bigfoot have large claws or feet like a cat? They purr, but what does the sound come from? It's like the noise when a donkey is laughing outside my grandma's house every morning. I wonder if that donkey affected the property market. Monopoly, I want to play now, but no one likes it as much as me. I think I should stop now.
Wow.
That was something.
How do I fit? That was surprisingly dark, Phil.
I don't know.
Quite violent. Okay, I said I wasn't going to psychoanalyze this.
Yeah, let's move on.
Think about that anymore. Good brain fart, Phil.
Thanks. Dan.
In the beginning, there was a Dan with the plan. He was the man with a hand that could reach up into the sky and pull down anything he wanted. So one day he went to his shop and yelled out, "Why would you do this to me? I don't understand. For God's sake, where are my shoes? Who did you take them from?" It started raining and the dogs howled a final swan song of justice into the cold night. The weeping trees swayed in the wind of forgetfulness as the world plummeted into a darkness only known to those who have the secrets. I remember last Tuesday like it was my last, with the bacon on sale and the fiery hats in the display of the new shop window. "Who are you to say these things to me?" I cast to my shadow as it ran away for not accepting the truth. Will we ever have the answers? Kicking things is illegal. You should know that by now. It's been a cold, dark cave and a fiery, wonderful 400 years on this planet, and the final lesson at the end of the day is not which socks don't match up in pairs, but which umbrella you take on holiday to a sandy beach. Bazinga.
I think my brain just melted.
I think I need to go to a cold, quiet place for a long time.
A dark cave, perhaps?
No.
Dan's fears.
Why are we doing this? I mean, we're literally saying all of our weaknesses out loud, ready to be exploited by an evil genius slash future dystopian government.
The supernatural.
Poltergeists, witches, demons, you name it. If it's a magically powered evil being that defies the rules of reality, I am terrified of it. Which is funny, because I do not believe that any of these things exist. 100%. Go figure.
The dark.
I'm afraid of the dark. I used to think this was kind of embarrassing as an adult, but now I understand it is one of humanity's most ancient primordial fears based on something quite sensible. Don't leave the cave because you can't see well and you'll probs get eaten by a bear. As opposed to bears, I tend to imagine various monsters from horror movies I watched at an inappropriately young age that don't actually exist, but I like to think the urge to never expose my back to a dark room will one day save me. Hear me out on this one, okay? I'm not afraid of trees. I'm afraid of scary trees in scary places. I think forests are generally spooky and have that whole what evil lurks within getting lost vibe. But as I referenced above, when I was 9, I watched the Blair Witch Project on TV in my room at 5 a.m. and it literally traumatized me.
It traumatized me too. That film is horrific.
Don't do that.
Don't. Specifically man-made objects underwater.
Thanks. Turns out there isn't an actual name for this. Thalassophobia is the fear of the sea, but I'm fine with the sea, man. Like, I love the sea. I've been diving, I've jumped off cliffs, I'm even one of those let's swim over to that island over there kind of maniacs. No fear of abyssal depths or standing on crabs, but put me near a buoy or a boat and I will freak out. I don't know what it is, but I just can't stand man-made things underwater. Ropes, anchors, ladders. You have nightmares about murderers and the apocalypse? I have them about falling off an oil rig and accidentally touching a slimy pipe.
That makes no sense to me. The things in the sea are so much scarier than the boats in the sea.
The inanimate objects.
Have you seen that 16-foot jellyfish? Terrifying. It's like a thing from nightmares. Moths.
Don't trust them. Unlike graceful and composed butterflies who swoop and ascend serenely, moths can just seemingly instantly dart a meter in any direction. You need to always be prepared for contact. And also, as a late-night laptop in bed user, who invented a creature attracted to light? A cruel joke.
Spiders.
Okay, pretty basic and uninteresting, but oh my god, spiders are gross. Funnily enough, I'm fine with tarantulas. I know a guy who once had one as a pet, and it was kind of cute. I don't really mind tiny spiders who get squished if you sneeze towards them, but there is a special middle ground which I just cannot stand. I feel like it might have something to do with a particular traumatic memory. Warning, if you find spiders gross, you might want to just, you know, turn down the volume for a bit.
The spider on the chest incident.
I was 9. Back then, I asked my parents for a bunk bed in my room. No idea why, I just think I found them exciting whenever I went to a hotel with them, so the idea of being able to sleep in a top bunk at my discretion was indescribably exciting. It was a hot summer's night, and I was sleeping bare-chested with the covers off and the windows open. In the middle of the night, I awoke because of a strange tickling on my chest. I reached with my right arm down the wall to the light switch, and I looked back to see the biggest, blackest, meatiest, hairiest house spider... Tegernaria domestica, if you want to look it up, I've no idea why you would, was descending from the ceiling directly above my face and trying to crawl up my neck. I have never flipped out quite like I flipped out at that moment. I screamed and thrashed, wiping myself with the bedsheet in an attempt to scrape it off, barrel rolls directly off the top bunk 5 feet onto the floor, and slapped myself in the chest about 50 times. I ran out of my bedroom all the way downstairs, trembling with horror, when my mum ran out of her room in a panic just to laugh when I explained what happened. Thanks, Mum. I slept on the sofa for 3 days.
Ugh, I'm all itchy now.
Phil's fears. You spell that with a PH?
I mean, the opportunity for a title pun was there. I had to take it.
Wow. Horses.
I just don't trust their legs or their intentions. Also, one time I actually rode one at Horse World, and when I got off the horse, a load of black liquid ran out of my nose. Suspicious.
Burglars.
I live in a constant fear that someone is going to climb through my window. I think my future house will have bulletproof guard tigers and robotic airlocks.
The sea.
This is my main fear, as it were. I've always felt uneasy about deep sea water. I think part of it is just human nature, as why would anyone want to plunge themselves into freezing cold salty water that is potentially filled with sharks and jellyfish and yet undiscovered man-eating seaweed? I've had some traumatic water-related incidents, though. The story I'm about to tell made my friend Louise cry laugh, so feel free to enjoy my pain.
The snorkeling incident.
Okay. It's taking a lot to tell this story again. I was about 14 years old on a dream holiday to Australia with my parents. We were about to fulfill most people's ultimate life goal, snorkeling in the Great Barrier Reef. I realised how lucky I was. This was a thing at the top of everyone's bucket list and a once-in-a-lifetime experience. In typical Phil fashion, I had the worst day ever. We got a large boat to the middle of the reef, and before we started our snorkel adventure, the captain asked if anyone wanted a flotation device, a huge pink marshmallowy thing that wrapped around your lower half. I thought, no, I can do this. I know how to swim. So I declined the crotch marshmallow and jumped into the water. I then realised that many of the fully grown dads and teenagers were wrapped in lovely pink floating cocoons, while I was immediately flailing around and drinking half the sea. The idea was that we had to swim about a mile to a small island and have lunch on it. I could see no island. Was this some kind of joke? I span around in circles until I noticed a tiny dot on the horizon. That was the island? I tried to put my feet down and gather some energy until I realised the seabed was lined with razor-sharp coral. Pull yourself together, Phil. If these tiny babies can swim in the sea, so can you, I thought as I started doggy paddling towards the island-shaped dot. I swam a good few metres and may have seen a flash of a fish when suddenly a small wave descended into my face and filled my snorkel with water. I flailed a lot. For some reason I thought rolling over would be a good idea, which led to me filling my nose with half the ocean and losing my mask, which immediately sank to the bottom. I like to think a tiny fish is using it as a home right now. Without a mask, I couldn't see anything, and all around me I could hear families saying, "Oh look, Tilly, a blue starfish! Mummy, look at the conger eel! The dolphin is letting me ride on its back, Jonathan!" I wasn't going to let this beat me. I was going to make it to the island. I tried one final kick of triumph when one of my flippers slipped off and drifted into the distance. With one flipper, I was now swimming in circles. I was defeated. All I could do was lie on my back and cry out, "Help! Help me! Help!" A few minutes later, a 19-year-old lifeguard that looked like someone from Home and Away lifted me onto a giant lilo and was dragging a pale lump of failure across the sea to the island. Everyone watched as he deposited me onto the sand like a beached whale. At least I could enjoy my lunch now. Who wants a cheese sandwich?
Oh, God.
No.
Phil and Dan in Japan.
Okay, that sounded terrible.
That was, I'm so sorry. That was, we just ruined the book, didn't we?
Yeah, what if we have some kind of jingle like Phil and Dan in Japan? Phil and Dan in Japan.
Yep, okay.
No?
No, I think that was somehow worse.
I mean, the listeners know what this page is now, so maybe we should just get on with
it. Let's just move on.
Okay. I want to go back.
Okay, Phil, you should probably rewind yourself a little bit.
Oops, let's try that again.
Hey, why is your name first in the title?
Well, Phil and Dan in Japan sounds way better than Dan and Phil in Japan.
Okay, you win this round.
Out of every country in the entire world, it has always been my biggest dream to go to Japan.
Me too. You see, we are what you would call gigantic weeaboos. That means people who are obsessed with anime, video games, sushi, and Japanese culture in general.
Our favourite games are Final Fantasy, one of our favourite movies is Kill Bill Volume 1, the showdown at the House of Blue Leaves.
Thankfully, our trip didn't involve any mass dismemberment. But yes, going to Japan is something that we have always talked about doing, so halfway through writing the book, we thought, hey, why don't we randomly go to Japan right now and just say it was for the book?
Best plan ever. So I did something very un-Phil-like and booked the tickets that very moment. No going back. We were going to Japan.
Well, we almost didn't make it.
Yeah, that may have been my fault.
At the airport, just before our flight, I asked Phil to check the departure screen, who told me, yeah, we have loads of time, when in reality, we had 5 minutes before the gate closed.
I thought the gate would be nearby and it would be no problem.
Our gate was 25 minutes and 2 monorails away.
I have never been so stressed.
In that situation, I like to just let the inevitability of the situation wash over me and know there's nothing I can do, but Phil went into full-on panic mode.
I remember looking at Dan directly in the eyes and saying, that's it. We're definitely going to miss our flight.
Then he started to sprint. Literally sprint to the gate.
I think it was more flailing.
He bounded through the airport like a roadrunner made of spaghetti, and I followed, coughing up my lungs. Of course, as this was us two, our gate was on the 5th floor, so our running included a fun 5 flights of stairs. I literally nearly died.
We were the very last people there, but when we arrived at the gate, it was still open. With my dying breaths, I asked the gate lady if we'd nearly missed the plane, and she said, oh, you had loads of time. We just send the message out a little early so the passengers aren't late.
Gee, thanks a lot, Linda.
So after the worst 10 minutes of my entire life, we got on the plane and we made it. And here is what we did in Japan. Akihabara.
The land of technology, anime merchandise, and life-size character body pillows. It is Akihabara.
This is one of the places I felt the most Japan-y.
You can't just invent words like Japan-y, but I know what you mean. There were neon billboards, arcades, and cosplayers everywhere.
Beware of venturing into the basements of anime stores, ooh, though. Mm. I'm still bleaching my eyes after a certain tentacle incident.
Phil?
There's actually a picture of me in one of these basements with the background blurred out for very good reasons.
No one other than me and Phil have seen the uncensored version of that photo. I think it would probably be illegal.
My eyes!
After a long day of shopping for anime merchandise, we got pretty hungry, so then we decided to go to a maid cafe.
I was actually nervous about this, as I had no idea what to expect.
A maid cafe is themed around the idea that you are a Victorian lord being waited on by your maids.
They sing to you and make you magical lattes, and you can even choose what animal is drawn on your drink. I went for a lion, and Dan, of course, went for an alpaca.
That was a delicious matcha tea latte, yeah. Actually. Mm.
After our drinks, we were each given a choice of a maid to have a photo with. I didn't realise we could have one with our waitress too, and she looked so sad when I didn't pick her.
Oh, Coco is still crying right now.
Stop. Phil. Intimidatingly, you have to go and stand on stage in front of everyone and choose some props out of the maid's box and have a Polaroid taken that she writes on for you as a souvenir. I know that sounds kind of creepy, but it was all innocent. Apparently it's quite touristy.
You say that, but there were some regulars I noticed in the corner.
Nothing weirder than that horde of crazy cat lady regulars that we saw in that cat cafe in London.
Oh, God. They were so crazy. There were so many of them. They just spent all day at that cat cafe, didn't they?
They did.
Stroking the cats.
It was weird.
Having below average cups of tea.
Top tip!
We wouldn't recommend eating a main meal at a maid cafe, as the food looked quite basic and expensive. Just go for a drink and maybe a little dessert.
Top tip!
There are also butler cafes, where instead of Japanese maids, you are served by British guys. So we gave this one a miss, as it didn't seem very exotic to be served a cup of tea by Graham from Cardiff.
Shibuya.
Shibuya, an entertainment and fashion district that is also home to the most insane crossing where... one second, let me check. Shibuya crossing... Around 45,000 people cross each day.
I felt like I was in a stampede of orderly wildebeest.
I felt very much like Mufasa crossing that road.
Spoilers, Dan.
Oh, come on, that movie's like 20 years old.
Another landmark of Shibuya is the saddest statue in the world. Hachiko.
Hachiko is a dog whose owner used to meet him every day outside the train station. One day, his owner died, and Hachiko waited outside the station for his master every day for 10 years, until he died too.
Dan, you're making people cry.
This dog went on to become a national treasure, and they built a statue in his honour, and we took a photo of us mourning next to him.
So much sadness.
There is actually a man stood on the bench next to me. Do you reckon he's come for his daily contemplate of the... morals of the Hachiko story?
I think so.
Pericara!
These photo booths can be found on the top floors of most arcades. They are famous for making you look slightly alien-like, as they automatically enlarge your eyes and make your legs longer to make you look beautiful.
Japan is attracted to aliens, apparently.
Yeah. You can also decorate your pictures with futuristic pens. We made some terrifying creations. We look so much like aliens.
They actually, like, swap your eyes for dolls' eyes. It's very terrifying.
It's horrific.
Wow. They gave me some great hips, though. Yeah. I wonder if I could get that Photoshop picture for my display. Harajuku.
Gwen Stefani wasn't lying, as the Harajuku girls do have wicked style.
And the boys.
And the crepes.
Oh my God, the Harajuku crepes were life-destroyingly good. I am foaming at the mouth just remembering them.
BRB, going back to Harajuku to buy a crepe.
If you've been to London, Harajuku felt a little bit like Camden. It was very cool and market-like, with loads of stalls and unusual stores and kooky fashion.
Also, Dan bought so much anime merchandise from one store, he got a free tissue box.
I had never been so happy.
Top tip!
If you want to visit a mall, go to a place called Sunshine City. Not only does it have an aquarium with seals in the ceiling.
Seal thing?
A seal-zing.
Seal-zing?
Get that in my home. But it is home to the largest Pokemon shop in the entire world. Warning, you may spend your life savings like we did.
Meiji Jingu.
We couldn't spend a week in Japan without absorbing some culture.
So we decided to visit a shrine called Meiji Jingu, hidden away in the middle of a forest in the city.
The entrance to the shrine, or the torii, was the most gigantic wooden thing I'd ever seen in my entire life. Apparently, you are supposed to walk around the outside of it, as you can only walk through the centre if you are a god. Of course, Phil just walked right through the middle of it unknowingly, and everybody stared at him.
I didn't know that was a thing.
SMH.
Then we arrived at a place where you can write prayers on a piece of wood and hang them from a tree. Dan wished for people to be nice to Kanye. Mm-hmm. I wished for pandas to mate more frequently. And it came true.
It did. I remember it being the news as soon as we arrived home. They should call you the Panda Whisperer.
I prefer Panda Lord.
Okay.
Shinjuku.
Tokyo's organized crime slash red light district. Yay.
I expected it to be seedy and weird, but it was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, we went straight to a place called the famous Robot Restaurant Show, which was the most insane 2 hours of my entire life. Basically, a crazy slash amazing guy spent over £50 million on turning a building into an insane holographic casino with a show about giant robots.
At one point, a man in a gorilla suit rode into the room on the back of a giant robot moth and got shot by a woman in a bikini firing a bazooka.
If that sentence doesn't sell it to you, then I don't know what will. We also visited the famous bar in the hotel from Lost in Translation so we could pretend to be Bill Murray.
That was the most amazing burger I've ever had. Also, nice views.
Mm-hmm. Then we went to the Studio Ghibli Museum.
If you're a fan of Ghibli movies, then this is a must. It's a special museum designed to give you a tour of Hayao Miyazaki's mind.
It was very magical. We even got to see an exclusive Ghibli movie which used human voices for each sound effect, and the ticket to go into it was a film cell.
Unfortunately, it was pouring down when we were there, but that kind of made it a little bit more authentic
in a way. It did, yeah. It felt like very Totoro under a giant lily leaf.
Yeah.
And then, probably the best thing that we did, the day we visited Mount Fuji.
Dun 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 dun.
How is that a noise that represents that?
It's like the Mount Fuji. It's something that deserves its own noise. Dun 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 dun.
And that is the noise.
Yeah. Before we begin though, do you want Phil's Fuji facts?
Oh, I'm sure this'll be fun. Okay, Phil.
Mount Fuji is called Fujisan in Japanese. It's an active volcano that last erupted in 1707, and a dragon nestles beneath the mountain guarding a huge pile of gold.
Yeah, I think that's the lonely mountain from The Hobbit, Phil.
I ran out of interesting facts.
Okay. One of our favourite days in Japan was our excursion to Mount Fuji. We decided to do everything ourselves on this trip, but for this adventure, we did need a guided tour, as it is 100 miles outside of Tokyo, and we can't navigate our way to a Tesco, let alone a faraway mountain.
As with every form of transport, we almost missed the bus.
Only because literally everyone in Japan needed to pee in one toilet at the bus station.
It seemed like it. We ran for the bus and we got greeted by our incredible host and tour guide, Riko.
Riko.
The first thing she did was sing an improvised song about Mount Fuji, coaches, and Japan, which was actually strangely amazing.
Do you remember how that went?
Fuji-san, Fuji-san, Fuji-san. That's as much as I remember.
It was along that lines. Yeah. It wasn't better than that, was it? It was quite incredible. She then told us a story to help remember her name, which was, oh, what's her name? Oh, I can't recall. Recall. Riko. Name Riko. And everyone was like, oh, great. What a character.
She didn't stop talking for the entire 9-hour trip.
I think she tried to sell us an apartment at one point. Anyway, we drove through the beautiful Japanese countryside to reach Mount Fuji, stopped at a vantage point to appreciate the view, only for the mountain to be totally blocked by a complete troll cloud. Like, seriously, of all of the places, this one cloud could have stopped directly on top of the mountain. Thanks, nature.
Thankfully, we didn't just stare at it from afar. We got to drive up it.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped at the fourth station, where hikers leave humanity behind to ascend the peak. There was actual snow on the ground, and it was absolutely freezing.
Yeah, there were a bunch of lads on our tour bus who decided to wear shorts and t-shirts because it was a hot day in Tokyo. They didn't enjoy this 45 minutes on the freezing mountain.
So many blue knees. Thankfully, they had the best inventions ever. Vending machines that sell warm coffee.
You bought two just to put them in your pockets.
Totally worth it. Anyway, who are you to talk, Mr. Bought a Can of Air from the gift shop?
Okay, that's not my name, but yes, I bought some bottled Fuji Air, which wins the award for most pointless slash hilarious souvenir ever.
Will you ever drink the air out of it?
Maybe if the world starts to end, I'll just have the freshest breath ever ready to go.
We descended the mountain and went on a boat ride,
which had fake steam pipes,
to get another great view of the troll cloud. Then we went on a cable car ride up to the volcanic hot springs resort of Hakone.
Unfortunately, there was no time to bathe in the hot springs, which is always my favourite part of an anime.
Apparently, everyone had to be completely naked, which would have been mildly awkward. We did see some bubbling water, though.
Yes, there were rapturous shafts of volcanic steam bursting from the ground everywhere.
It sounded like this.
Giving them the true 4D experience there,
yeah.
Phil.
I ate some black ice cream, which gave me a black mouth for the rest of the day, and it just kind of tasted like vanilla, which was slightly disappointing.
What were you expecting?
I don't know, ash, dragon blood, at least some black cherry or something.
They also sold something called black eggs, which were eggs that had been boiled in the sulfurous water bubbling out of the ground.
Sounds healthy.
I feel like health and safety wasn't really taken seriously over there. Anywho, we were descending the mountain and about to journey back to Tokyo when all of a sudden the troll cloud decided to move and we were greeted with a perfect view of the mountain.
Fuji-san revealed himself. It was like looking at a perfect cartoon mountain. It was absolutely incredible.
It's like a perfect triangle.
It is.
Isn't it? Definitely the hottest mountain out there, people.
Sexy mountain.
It really was the perfect end to an amazing trip. We then got to travel back via bullet train, which was in my head built up to be some mega futuristic space vehicle, but just turned out to be like any moderately fast train.
I was kind of disappointed that it didn't feel like a roller coaster with robot butlers on board pouring you tea. Also, it was when we had to say goodbye to Rico, so I was emotionally vulnerable.
She and her strange songs will be in our hearts forever.
Fuji-san. Tour guides.
It wasn't just Rico that we had escorting us around.
No, thankfully, as otherwise I'm sure we would have got lost and walked into Godzilla's cave and been eaten. We had two fellow YouTuber friends living in Tokyo, Duncan and Mime.
Having two fluent Japanese speakers allowed us to just enjoy smiling and nodding during every conversation for half of the holiday.
Now I think about it, they could have been saying anything, like, forgive our friends for being too tall and knocking everything over in your shop. British people are just damaged like that.
To be honest, we were too tall for most of the buildings, and I would describe your clumsiness as damaging.
Either way, I'm glad they were there. Thanks, guys. Cherry blossoms.
The reason April is the most popular month for going to Japan is the cherry blossom trees.
The super pretty trees only bloom for a couple of weeks in the whole year, and depending on the weather, you could totally miss it.
Yeah, thankfully, when we descended from the sky on our journey into Tokyo, we were greeted with an ocean of pink flora.
It was so beautiful. I felt like I was in a slow motion scene in a movie the whole time. Next time, we will participate in the special cherry blossom viewing picnics they call Hanami.
They're made for an ultra kawaii, very aesthetic background for photos, though. We took many selfies in the flowers.
Hundreds of selfies.
Just thousands, probably. Hours.
Language.
Thankfully, pretty much everyone we spoke to in Japan knew some English.
Japanese seems like the most impossible language to learn ever. Did you know there's over 50,000 kanji?
Those are word symbols.
To learn.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Something funny we realized, though, was that no one could understand our English due to our British accents. This sounds really bad, but honestly, the best way to be understood was to speak English while attempting a terrible Japanese accent.
Remember that time we went shopping and walked up to that thing we thought was a parade?
Oh, you mean the one that turned out to be the anti-tourism protest? Yeah, it probably would have been good if we could have read some Japanese that day. Now, let's talk about food.
You better like sushi and noodles if you visit Japan, as there is a lot of sushi and noodles.
Yeah, interestingly, unlike Britain, there were hardly any foreign food restaurants, but we love Japanese food, so it was like heaven for us.
Not sure about the traditional breakfast, though. No offense, but I'm not really in the mood for pickled fish and miso soup first thing in the morning. Thankfully, there are enough waffle and pancake places to keep me alive for the whole trip. If I had my blood tested, I think it would be about 18% maple syrup.
The only thing I didn't like were the fermented soybeans.
I think if you put the word fermented in front of anything, it's probably gross.
Fermented cheese.
Fermented bees.
Okay, let's stop. Now let's talk about the subway.
All people told us before we left was how apparently complicated the Tokyo subway system was. Thankfully for us, there was an app that just told us where to go.
Yeah, we were fine, but I think before apps existed, we probably would have died of old age trying to navigate through the tunnels.
The weird thing is how gigantic the stations are. We once walked 500 meters from the entrance to one of the lines.
Yeah, we realized that if you're traveling less than a mile, you might as well just walk above ground and inhale some fresh air / sakura petals.
Also, we were too tall, so we kept getting hit in the face by the handles. Japan just was not built for people of our lengthiness.
Do you remember that time I couldn't walk into that shop because I hit my head on the entrance?
Oh yeah, I won't lie, that was hilarious.
Everybody laughed at me.
One other cool thing is that each train has its own jingle for when it arrives. More things should have jingles.
What, like?
I don't know, toasters, umbrellas, kettles. I think I just need more jingles in my life. Themed cafes.
You think the idea of a cat cafe is exciting? You know nothing.
Tokyo is obsessed with themed cafes. These are places that serve food and drinks like any normal cafe, but with a crazy theme. And we mean crazy. Here's just a few that we stumbled across. Snake Cafe.
Owl Cafe.
Penguin Cafe.
Ninja Cafe.
Vampire Cafe.
Robot Cafe.
And Final Fantasy Cafe.
There was even a Tokyo Ghoul Cafe based on an anime about cannibal monsters where all of the food was made to look like human flesh. We avoided that one. I'm kind of hungry now.
Yeah, me too.
Now let's talk about Phil's gambling problem with gacha machines.
These are machines where you insert 100 yen and get a random prize inside a plastic egg.
You were obsessed with them.
Who doesn't want a keyring of a cat riding on the back of some sushi or a deer brandishing a hammer?
Essential purchase.
And if you're a pro like me, you can make it extreme by gambling on the 1000 yen machine. There was hundreds of mystery prizes ranging from new computers to jewellery, but would you risk £5 on possibly nothing?
I remember how excited you were about pressing that prize button.
It could have been so many cool things, but no. Of course, I got a gold purse that was probably worth about 50p.
Stellar use of your money there, Phil.
Thanks.
And that was our trip to Japan.
I almost had to buy a new suitcase because we bought so much stuff.
How'd it compare to England for you?
It's like two different worlds. I'm not sure I could live there, but I absolutely loved visiting and will definitely return. I want to bring back one of their toilets.
Really?
It's hard to go back after experiencing a warm seat with butt spray action.
TMI! Okay, I'd like to go back and see some more rural Japan outside of Tokyo at a different time of year.
See, it was totally worth going just for the book.
That was a good idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Damn, maybe we should have done it more often and gone to Disneyland.
Or on safari.
Let's not kid ourselves, you'd probably get eaten.
True. Well, we hope you enjoyed listening to our adventures.
Sayonara!
I want to go back!
The Fanga.
A Dan and Phil manga, Volume 1.
Art by Arctoids.
Story by Dan and Phil.
Dan and Phil are walking towards school. They reach into their pocket, pull out their phones, and turn on the front cameras.
Fringe check!
They rush their hands through their hair, and just when their hair got perfect and ready for the day ahead, they got attacked by a breeze.
Ah!
Oh, no!
Well, here we are, Dan-kun. Our first day back at school. So, did you finish all the homework over summer?
Oh, no. Dan and Phil sit down in class. Who are you staring at?
Zack Stryker-san, captain of the Serial Club.
Phil gazes over to a boy with blonde hair. He seems to sparkle with a milky radiance.
Notice me, Serial Senpai.
The teacher walks into the class. Attention, please! School is cancelled today. You must all return home immediately. Why? There was an accident in the lab with the school mascot. An accident? What does that mean?
What happened to Mr. Squiggles?
Suddenly, two giant purple tentacles burst through the wall and carry their teacher up into the sky. OMG, Sensei, we have to save her!
Holy cats! We must do something, Dan-kun!
But Phil-san, we're in school. We shouldn't.
The power we were given came with a responsibility. You know what we have to do.
They open their shirts to reveal two golden animal pendants swinging across their chests. They spin into the air, glowing with light as they seemingly transform with ears, fluffy shorts and frilly gloves into a llama boy and a lion. I don't remember this being so tight.
You need to lay off the popcorn.
Hey! Pointing at the octopus and brandishing his magical lion scepter, Phil says,
Lion ability! Sonic roar!
A beam of pure sound waves drive into the octopus, severing the tentacle that is holding their teacher in the air. It worked! I'll distract it! Dan brandishes his llama blade of justice and says, Apakability! Cute face! His face transforms into that of an ultra-kawaii llama. The octopus seems infatuated, but then suddenly lumps upon him entirely.
Dan-kun! No!
Dan is lifted into the air as a tentacle slowly starts to creep down his trousers towards his butt. Gah! Get this thing off me! There's no time left. We have to do it.
Our deadliest weapon of all.
Ultimate Friendship Special Laser Attack!
With the combined glow of friendship, a beam comes out of Dan's llama blade and Phil's lion scepter and shoots towards the octopus, blowing it into a million pieces. What a mess.
Tastes kind of minty.
Dude. They jump towards each other for an ultimate high five.
Friendship!
With the class saved, their teacher stands up and walks towards them. Dan and Phil, not only did you save our lives, but you have provided enough squid to feed the school for months. Zack Stryker then crawls out of the rubble towards Phil.
Serial-senpai?
Sugoi! Phil, you are amazing! I would be honored if you joined me as co-captain of the Serial Club.
I don't know what to say. Thank you.
But Phil, the world knows we're magical boys now. What do we do?
I guess our lives will never be the same.
The next day, Dan and Phil are sat on the sofa, playing games on the sofa crease and eating a bowl of cereal. The same as always.
The end.
And now in another wonderful contrast between Dan and Phil's personalities, we take a moment to think about Dan and Phil's sock drawers.
I'm sorry, Dan, but your sock drawer is the most boring thing I've ever seen.
It's beautiful. It's like a dark abyss. I just want to dive into it and bathe my soul.
Meanwhile, I've got jack-o'-lanterns, owls, foxes, Spider-Man,
sloths,
sharks,
joysticks,
Tetris, robots...
Captain America.
Captain America poking out the corner. That is how your sock drawers would look.
It's garish, Phil.
I think anyone can express themselves secretly with their socks.
But yours don't match. You've tucked a sloth into Captain America.
That's what he wanted.
You didn't need to go there in the sock drawer. Well, I think that says something about both of us.
The 7-second writing challenge.
I'm sure all of you by now have heard of the most epic game in the universe, the 7-second challenge.
The rules are pretty simple. You have to do a challenge in 7 seconds. But how did we put that in a book, you ask?
The 7-second writing challenge.
As we are now both experienced authors, we thought we'd put our typing speed and creativity to the test. We gave the other person a topic and they had just 7 seconds to write something about them. No pressure.
So why don't we share our 7-second writing creations with the listeners? You can try it yourself as well. It's very hard to type something this fast in seven seconds. Dan, tell everybody what you wrote for volcanoes.
They are hot. I don't like falling in them. That would hurt. Wow. Very true.
Yeah.
And spelt correctly, well I must add, when I wrote that. Right, Phil, then your next one was flamingos.
They are pink, I don't trust their eyes or souls, and they s- We'll never know what that S was.
They S. What, you just typed an S and then it ended, Phil.
I'm not going to tell you what it would have been.
You don't trust flamingos' souls.
Dan, artificial intelligence.
It will destroy the world, we need safeguards, stop Facebook.
Wow.
That got deep.
Yeah.
Stop Facebook. Is that the incoming Skynet that will destroy society?
Who knows?
I went there. Phil. God.
God is on a cloud playing a flute. He is everywhere. Or no.
Or no. I like that was about to get really profound.
And then it was.
God is everywhere. Or nowhere. Wow. But he is playing a flute either way.
He is.
And on a cloud.
Obviously.
Thank you, Phil.
Puberty.
The change is coming. How embarrassing. Don't talk to me, Mum. I think that was everybody's experiences summed up in that short time frame there.
Yeah.
All spelt correctly. I'm just going to throw that in, Phil, with your no woof and your they s.
Hey, it's hard.
Phil, embrace the nightmare. Cheese.
Cheese is gross and gives you nightmares. I don't like it.
Hold the phone.
There we go.
Phil, you cheated.
How?
You cheated twice. Firstly, where's the apostrophe in don't?
What
is this? This is a professional book. And also, you can't just change U to the letter U.
I can.
I wasn't aware that we were playing by those rules. I could have just skimped and done text speak the whole time.
That's internet slang, Dan.
Okay.
Penguins.
Cold birds. Why can't they fly so many movies? Why?
What about your typo there?
What?
No. T-fly.
T-fly is word, Phil. Yeah. Why can't they T-fly? That's where... I don't have an excuse for that one, I'm sorry. Phil, the internet, go.
Web and information, we like it. And Ian?
That looked like, no, you were about to say, we like it and
I'm...
Where was that going, Phil, before you were brutally cut off?
I'm never going to tell you.
Information is quite a dense word to type in 7 seconds.
Yeah, well, quite proud of that.
We do like the web and information.
Dan, bees.
They are the friends of the flowers, not like evil wasps. Yay, bead.
Bead.
I clearly was very overwhelmed. I had too much to say about bees in too little time there.
As don't we all.
Phil!
I am Phil. I am cool. I like movies and I have hair and...
Wow. You got all the essential facts in there. You are Phil. You said you're cool.
Yeah.
It's questionable. You like movies and you have hair.
I have hair. Listen to this. That's my hair.
Yeah, don't just shake your hair at the... Oh, I'm so sorry to everyone whose ears got violated by that hair shaking noise.
Dan.
Yep.
Dan.
Brown hair, nice face, all right guy, I guess. Cool clothes.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool clothes.
I spelled guess wrong.
Yes.
Geyser. Phil, this is an important one. See how you did. The Amazing Book is not on fire.
The books is the best book of all time. I am enjoying writing.
You did say the books, but yeah. You got in the promo there. It is the best book of all time.
It is.
Obviously, by page 194, you all know this by now, so we hope that you've enjoyed this adventure.
I have.
Well, that was quite something, wasn't it?
Who won?
I don't know. I mean, I think my writing on bees was pretty poetic.
You did type bead at the end.
Oh, don't you mean you, Phil, letter? I saw what you did with your blatant cheating.
More like cheese-ting.
So what do you guys think? Please let us know if you want us to write all of our future books in 7-second writing challenges, or maybe just we should have recorded this whole audiobook in 7-second segments.
I'm thinking no.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly concur. Now, I'm sure one of the great mysteries of the universe to many of our subscribers is what do Dan and Phil privately text each other?
Well, worry no more. As in The Amazing Book is Not on Fire, we gave you an exclusive look into some of the things we text each other. Let's have a read.
What even is this? Strange M emoji.
It looks like the lightning emoji got drunk.
Lol. Balloon emoji.
Weird emoji I've never seen. Question mark, exclamation mark. One.
Tiki statue emoji, badge emoji, recycling emoji.
What's that one? What are these ones?
That's roller coaster.
Roller coaster, weird thing, and another weird emoji.
And then I said paperclip, a sign, and a shoe.
Let's stop.
Okay.
Sarah Michelle Gellar just follow frieded me, and I don't know what to do.
Ha ha! Ha! Oh God! Oh man! That is the best and worst thing. I think you have to acknowledge it.
Thanks for the follow Friday at Real SMG Birthday Maid. Something like that?
You know, or reply to her tweet with something classy and understated like, ah, oh, thank you, this tweet is the best birthday present I've ever had today. Smiley face. Did you take the keys?
Did you?
No.
What? We're locked out. It's Sunday. We can't get spare keys today. We'll have to go stay with someone.
Lol, JK, I took the keys.
I hate you. Here's some salt and pepper magnified. Insert picture of salt and pepper magnified.
Ooh, it looks like Scottish rock. I want to chew it.
Household dust. Insert picture of magnified household dust that looks really gross.
Gross? WTF, is that an enemy?
IDK, it's probably on your eyelid right now.
Emoji.
Please get me some chocolate or something.
Do you really need chocolate?
Yes, you don't know what I've been through today.
What, sitting on your laptop for 5 hours?
There were two wasps in the lounge. Wasp emoji. Bee emoji.
Wow. Okay, I'll go buy chocolate. Should I bring a coat? Now it's not raining, sky looks clear, and I'm just in a taxi. Insert picture of torrential rain. I'm going to drown walking to Boots.
OMG, you don't need to go to Boots. I think my hair will survive. What time is it?
There is literally a clock on your phone.
I meant day.
That is also on your phone.
Oh yeah. Where are you?
Having a dessert at a weird restaurant with a dog. Insert picture of dessert boat.
Oh my god, I want to eat it. The dessert, not the dog.
Thanks, I presume that.
I think I just deleted The Sims.
What? Why are you even on my pick, PC asterisk?
I'm installing that Badger game.
Well, how did you delete an entire program? Check the recycle bin.
The Sims is in the bin.
That's just a shortcut, you spork. Oh my god.
Grinning emoji.
Hello, gentle listeners, and welcome to another episode of Going Deep with Dan and Phil.
Robots.
All right, Phil, it's your turn. Set us up.
Hello and good evening slash morning slash lunch slash dinner o'clock people of the audiobook, and welcome to Going Deep with Dan and Phil. Today, I, the honourable and wise Philip Lester III...
You're just the first,
Don't
Philip
ruin
Lester.
My moment. Would like to start a discussion.
Sure, Phil. So, what do you want to talk about? Zips? The joy of midnight cereal?
Please, Dan, give me some credit. I want to talk about robots.
I'm sure you're picturing some kind of giant fighting thing, but I'm pretty confident I can take this somewhere interesting.
Dan, how do you know that I'm not a robot?
Really? Lots of reasons.
Just give me just one.
Well, you have 2-hour showers, which can't be good for a robot.
Waterproof skin, duh. Just as I thought, you can't prove that I haven't been a robot built to spy on you this whole time.
Okay, how's this? Why would anyone program a robot to be as clumsy as you?
Okay, you got me there. I'm not a robot, just in case you were still wondering.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying.
Do you think there are any super robots out there, though?
Nah, if that kind of technology existed, the Japanese would have already used it for something creepy everyone could buy. I think that the power of artificial intelligence will be one of our worries in the future, though.
It's crazy how quickly things are advancing. I bet by 2020 our phones will be able to holographically tuck us into bed at night.
That is an incredibly disturbing thing to imagine. Everything is built for Americans anyway. I wouldn't trust something with holographic powers to understand my British accent.
So what's to worry about? Surely we can just program the computers to behave and be nice, friendly toasters and vacuum cleaners that can just whip out the puns when your happiness levels are dropping?
Just imagine, Phil, what if the robot unprograms the safety program itself?
Whoa.
It's called a singularity, and it is the inevitable doom we're hurtling towards. The Matrix was a prophecy, I'm telling you now.
I kind of want the meteor we were talking about in the first Going Deep to arrive now.
Don't worry, hopefully we'll be long dead before any such technology exists to oppress us.
That's a weird way to put it, Dan. I think we should just keep the robots to cute small things that couldn't possibly rebel and murder us, like whisks and toothbrushes.
We already have an electric whisk and toothbrush, Phil.
See? The future is now. Let's stop advancing things before we regret it.
Do you think if we ever get smart enough to program emotions that computers will have souls?
Dan, that's too deep. It's too deep for Going Deep.
But seriously, do you think you would date a computer program? I don't think I could. You'd always know you're basically dating a descendant of a microwave.
Plus, I think humans have a certain spark of humanity that makes us do things a robot never could. Like today when you were out, I was practicing my wolf howl. Mm. I don't think a robot could handle that randomness.
Yeah, if a robot tried to understand your brain, it would probably fizzle out and explode.
If you could have any kind of robot, what would it be?
Probably some robo shoes that would make me exercise.
I'd make the ultimate robo chef. It would make all my meals and wake me up with a funnel of coffee carefully placed placed in my mouth.
You'd just be one of those guys from Wall-E with no need to move or go outside ever again, wouldn't you?
I think I'd miss the trees, actually. I do love a good tree.
That's good to know, Phil.
Though in our house of the future, I bet we could have holographic tree wallpaper with a HD camera streaming from deep within the rainforest.
You'd finally be at home, at one with the monkeys.
I feel like we've bonded during these two going deep chats. I'm going to miss it. Can I come into your room at 4 a.m. for deep and meaningful conversations now?
Remind me to buy a lock for my door.
Or get your robot butler to do it.
I spilled matter on our circuit boards. Error, error.
By purchasing the audiobook of The Amazing Book Is Not on Fire, you have earned yourself an exclusive pass to listen to the Dan and Phil debut album.
Enjoy some snippets of your favorite Dan and Phil songs, such as Lizards, Rave Time, Egg, 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 and Let's Buy a Stool.
Left to right, right to left, everybody's whisking up and down,
back and forth, up and down, everybody's whisking Delia Smith's face.
Sitting, yeah. Sitting, sitting. It gets the bitches. Work those arms. That'll give you the right muscles to do the fang. Egg, egg, egg. It's the king of all yolks.
It's a breakfast bar stool. It's a breakfast bar stool.
It's Japanese witchcraft. How do they do it? I don't know. It's this, and this, is this. But how? It's a purple mushroom. It's a cola thing. It's a horrible tea cake. Yeah, yeah. The fork of justice singing through the night.
Can you please get murdered on a different road? I'm trying to film.
Spice, and the spice, Cajun spices, spice in the pan, spicy fajitas,
yeah man.
Was the night before Christmas and all through the sea, jellyfish was stinging your entire family.
It's the crime dance, yeah. Crime.
I like bananas in the sunshine bananas. I like bananas on the moon. Moon.
Milk Quest, it's the best. Milk in your face, not cows.
Rave time. Don't step on the glass. Tinsel in your foot, bubble in your foot, bubble in your eye. Everybody cries when you go to A&E with a bubble in your face. Blood everywhere.
Hyper Kirby, Palmer and Sword. Eat the butter and the sugar till it's done. There are ghosts inside your butter. There's a skeleton in the sugar, and it's really spooky today on Halloween.
Shake the sugar. It's what your cane gave you.
Shit. Susan, you only had a short life, but now you're on the bar, and everyone is sad.
Lizards, they're my favorite spiky reptile.
So scaly!
Lizards, I'd freak out if I saw you in the bath.
Cold-blooded!
Lizards!
I wanna pour it all over my naked body.
No!
Except I don't, cause I burn to death.
Spooning the milky wheat onto the darker base.
Yeah!
Dripping all over his body.
No.
It's dripping, 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 yeah.
Making a tattoo as I'm dampening your net.
Let's buy a stool. But first we need to go to the kitchen. Go to the kitchen, then it will be an option. This is the kitchen song.
Slender man.
Does whatever a slender can. Can he jump from behind? Yes, he can!
Harajuku, you might find a Pikachu under the bench. There is no stench, because it's amazing in Japan.
The Urge, a Dan and Phil fanfiction by Dan Howell. It was a crisp winter's night in London, England. It was that particular time in late January where there was no longer any frost, but simply biting cold air in what felt like a completely empty atmosphere. Dan Howell was walking down the road. His tall black silhouette cast shadows from the artificial amber glow of street lamps. His breath formed swirls of mist with every exhalation, and he decided to slide his exposed hands inside his coat pockets to retain some warmth. The street was empty at this time, and his footsteps echoed up and down around him, only interrupted by the cruising hum of a taxi driving past. He wasn't totally alone after all. Dan had time to think on this journey. Time to think about what had happened the night before.
The events had played in his head so many times over that he didn't know whether he could trust their accuracy or if his own perceptions had rewritten how the events unfolded. Anyway, he thought about it. One thing was certain. His friend, Phil Lester, was dead. Phil always had a habit of being in the worst place at the worst time. It was an endearing quality that often resulted in funny stories for him to share with his friends or followers on the internet. He was a kind person. Perhaps that's why he was singled out as a victim. It wasn't fair. A painful stab of recollection shot through Dan's brain as if forcing itself through a wall that he had built to protect himself. He saw it again. The dead, lifeless eyes, the way it moved so swiftly out of the darkness. The blood. The blood was the most vivid memory of all. Dan had somehow found himself collapsed in a corner, unable to move, but out of the corner of his eye he saw the crimson trail of his friend's life weaving around the cobbled stones of the street and down a drain. Dan saw his hand twitching, those last moments of resistance and hope that something, someone would be able to save him. Then it stopped. That is the last time he saw Phil Lester alive. Dan arrived home at their apartment. It felt wrong. Opening the door to the living room, the usual bright colours of their possessions seemed inappropriate, disrespectful even. How could anything dare to be so bright at this time? He turned off the lights and collapsed on the grey carpet of their hallway. Sleep. The next day was to be Phil's funeral. Dan had no interest in going. His friendship with Phil was personal to him and not something he wanted to share with family and friends who would mean well but insult with every word of comfort. He decided that even if he had to attend physically, he would be somewhere else in his mind. He had to. Dan remained silent and stoic through the service. People left to return to their lives, the relatives trading condolences, leaving Dan alone in the room with the coffin. He didn't want to look. It would be real if he saw. He wanted to run away as fast as he could from this nightmare, but he had to see. Dan strode over and gazed into the box. Lifeless. Even with Phil's typically pale skin, you used to see the warm glow of life within. All that could be seen here was the sickly, pale green colour of death. Dan went to turn away, to walk out of the room into a life where everything familiar was gone, when something grabbed his wrist. "Don't go, it's okay." Dan turned to see the same pale skin he had just burned into his memory, gripping at his shirt. He looked up slowly to see his dead friend sat bolt upright. Dan ran. Not stopping to blink, breathe, or process a single thought, he sprinted out of the back exit and all the way across the grounds of the building to underneath the tree. He vomited. It wasn't real. He was hysterical. He tried to rationalize the thoughts in his head as he shook his eyes with distress. "Dan, stop running. I'm not going to hurt you." He spun around to see Phil, standing upright as if completely fine, with his hands forward as if anticipating Dan's irrational behavior. "You can't. I mean, this can't be real," Dan said, grasping behind his back to try and hold on to the tree as if it was a tether to reality. "You know I'm real, Dan. This is real. And I think you know why." "No," Dan shouted and pushed Phil backwards in utter disbelief. Phil grabbed Dan's wrists and pinned him against the tree. Dan could feel the sharper edges prodding uncomfortably into his back as if the tree itself was pushing him towards the nightmare. It was a vampire. The words penetrated into Dan's head and seemed to pull down on his soul, as if everything he'd been trying not to believe in the last 2 days was sinking like quicksand. "I don't know how, or if that's exactly what it is, but it explains it well enough," Phil said in a calmer tone, clearly aware of Dan's slow realization. "You aren't the real Phil," Dan said in a flat, emotionless tone. His head was bowed, and in Phil's grip it seemed Dan wasn't trying to resist anymore. "If what you're saying is true, you aren't Phil. You're just a beast possessing his body." He looked up and stared into Phil's eyes. He didn't see the bright blue pools of life that he used to. He saw emptiness. He must be right. Phil stared back at Dan, seeing his brown irises blazing with fury. Phil let his grip loosen for a second. Dan realized and swung a punch as hard as he could, hitting Phil square in the jaw. Phil reached towards his lip. Blood. He looked down at it in a strange way and glanced back up at Dan, who almost seemed to be expecting something. Phil decided to wipe the blood on his shirt. "I won't lie," Phil said, rearranging his suit jacket and sweeping his black hair away from his eyes. "I feel different. I feel urges. I still know who I am, what I do, what the difference is between right and wrong, and yet something within me, something primal..." "Shut up," Dan said, clenching his fist and visibly shaking with rage. "You are not my friend, and if I have to destroy his body to give him peace, do not think that I won't." Dan spun around, reaching for the sharp wood that was cutting into his back. In one sure motion, he snapped the branch and immediately swung towards Phil, who, as if in slow motion, leant backwards, smacked the branch from Dan's hand and grabbed him by the throat. Dan's head banged against the tree with a force that shook leaves from the branches falling over the boy's shoulders. His breath was heavy. He could feel the beads of sweat forming on his forehead. This was fear. He tried to move, but the force his friend was applying to his neck seemed immovable and impossible. Phil stepped closer until their noses touched and looked Dan directly in the eyes. I could kill you. Every fiber of my being is urging me to tilt your head back and bite your neck, but I can choose not to. What? Dan said, spitting out warmth before taking in a huge gasp. I don't want to kill you. I want you to join me. Dan felt his heart drop in pressure. An overwhelming stillness waved through his body until he was stunned into silence. No, please, he stuttered. You don't have a choice, but I do. Appreciate it, said Phil. Think about it, Dan. Things can continue like normal. We can tell everyone it was one of those miracle situations where I was never actually dead. We can go back to our apartment and continue our normal lives. With some dietary adjustments, I guess. Dan had completely lost his ability to think. Part of it made sense. Maybe it would be okay if he didn't have to lose his friend or his own life. He knew it wasn't true, though. Even though Phil was right in front of him, there was no breath coming out of his lips. The only sensation he experienced was the damp chill of Phil's skin pressing against his. Just then, Dan noticed a man who must be the groundskeeper walking by in the distance. Dan had made his choice, and he knew it would be the right one. Help! Dan shouted, shaking as hard as he could, causing Phil to almost loosen his grip. He's trying to ki- Then he felt it. Two sharp stabs pierced the skin of his neck. Dan dropped his arms and buckled his knees. He had lost. Phil moved in closer, pinning Dan's body against the tree as he gulped gallons of thick blood through his teeth and down his throat. Phil almost felt himself losing control, feeling a desire to completely give in to a more powerful force within himself. No, he said, pulling away, feeling the blood run down his neck past the collar of his shirt. Quickly, he raised his wrist and pierced his own veins. Drink, he ordered, pressing his wrist against Dan's mouth. Dan, with the last moments of his fading energy, attempted to resist, pitifully shrugging his shoulders. It wouldn't be enough. His natural instinct to breathe opened his lips, and the pungent taste of iron filled his mouth and flowed across his tongue. Dan's vision faded to black. Blinking. Vision hazy and unclear. A yellow light. A white ceiling. After what seemed like a dreamy eternity unable to move, Dan's eyes focused and noticed the familiar patterns of his bedroom ceiling. He was home. Had it all been a dream? Dan asked himself this as he reached to touch his bare chest with his fingers. He could still feel. Surely that meant he was still alive? His hand stopped. Palm lying flat over his chest, he tried to focus all senses on detecting something, anything. No pulse. He looked to the right to suddenly notice Phil sitting in a chair leaning over his bed. How do you feel? He asked with what seemed like a degree of confidence. Dan's eyes darted up and down, trying to decide what he made of this person or whatever it was sitting next to him. He sat up and swung his legs over the bed, lifting his head up with a strange new assuredness he had never felt before. He locked eyes with his friend. Hungry, Dan said, feeling within him an urge, a biological mission he now felt he had to begin. Me too, Phil said with a smirk. Why don't we go find someone to eat? The end.
The Hand, a Dan and Phil fanfiction by Phil Lester. Phil woke up covered in sweat and screaming. He wiped his muscular brow as he got out of bed. That nightmare had been something else. Weird, he said as he did his morning routine of 300 sit-ups. Dan was already in the kitchen making a delicious breakfast of bacon pancakes with extra maple syrup. Oh, hey, D-Slice, said Phil, backflipping into the room and high-fiving his friend in midair. Dan looked horrified. What's wrong? Phil asked as a bead of sweat dripped from his forehead and bounced off the mutant finger protruding out of his body. Your body! There's something happening to you, said Dan. Phil looked down in horror to see a human hand was starting to grow out of his chest, just below the nipple. It wasn't just growing. It was moving. In shock, Dan dropped his syrupy spatula onto his leather jeans and ruined them forever. No more leather jeans for Dan. We need to call the army, he told his raven-haired friend. Dan, no, they'll experiment on me. I don't want to die, Phil said as he let out a single tear, not being afraid to show emotion in front of his true best friend. They decided to keep it a secret. Over the next few weeks, the hand grew and grew. Phil continued to make YouTube videos. He just wouldn't film below the nipple. He had to keep this a secret from everyone. Dan and Phil even taught the hand some of their secret best friend handshakes. It was responding to the fun. When they watched Game of Thrones, the hand even started twitching with glee. Later that month, something unexpected happened. Dan and Phil were finishing another pancake session when the hand started violently vibrating. Dan, help! Phil screamed as the hand started gesticulating wildly. Dan could only stand and watch as the hand started to extend out of Phil's chest. The hand was reaching for Dan. Instinctively, he started pulling it, and something happened that none of the British boys would ever expect. After a few pulls, there wasn't just a hand. There was an arm and an elbow. An entire human was being dragged out of the inside of Phil. He was giving birth. There was a giant wet explosion. All that was left of Phil was a lump of skin.